afternoon, gardeners. You're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and Karen.
Good afternoon. Ahi Marie.
Today, we are going to be carrying on with beauty treatments part two because we had so much to talk about last time. So our Plants That Change World, we'll do another show on that later, but we just want to talk about beauty treatments for your hair. And one of the most beautiful plants in the entire world is going to be our plant of the week. So,
okay, yeah. So let's start with, the other hair product that I've been researching. And I really wanted to do this one because I use it myself and so do you. Your
yes.
hair's looking really nice
oh,
at the moment.
Thank you.
You've had your holiday touch-up,
yeah,
Selena.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is henna.
Henna.
So, yes, henna is used for temporary tattooing as well. It's the same plant.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to be focusing on the hair product
yeah.
today just because we're doing the beauty products, although henna tattoos are beautiful,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really interesting reading up about them because they kind of came up quite a bit as I was doing my research on
okay.
that there's a lot of tradition and spirituality and ritual involved with those tattoos.
Oh, yes.
A lot
yes.
of the women in the Middle East that do it, they will get hennaed up for days before they get married.
Yes.
By all the family and the mother-in-law. So you imagine just lying there having these people like...
Yeah.
it's all part of it. So neat. But yeah, it feels a bit like my sort of, when I got married, sort of 3 to 4 hours in the morning and I'm done.
Oh,
I'm out.
No.
Throw on the dress.
You need
let's
a couple
go.
Of months to get
yeah,
married.
Yeah, they spend like a whole week, if not more. And then the festivities and all. And then other people in the part that are part of the festivities get hennaed as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Okay.
So what is it? Well, it's a dye prepared from the plant Lawsonia inermis, also known as the henna tree and the Egyptian privet. And it is the sole species of the genus Lawsonia. So that makes it quite special.
Okay. And does it grow here?
So it grows in wild in regions experiencing cycles of drought and monsoon rains. So after watching the news, probably quite a few areas these days. Hey, does
yeah.
it feel like that? It's either like one.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Specifically India, Egypt, Sudan and Morocco. Generally, the native habitat of henna is the tropical and subtropical regions of Africa, Southern Asia and Northern Australasia, semi-arid regions. So not in New Zealand yet.
Oh, okay.
I reckon you could probably grow it in the drier regions, though.
Probably.
Maybe up north, Hawke's Bay.
Yeah.
Down south, too cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whole unbroken henna leaves will not stain the skin until the lawsone molecules are released from the henna leaves. So that's why when you buy the henna products, they're all powdered up.
Okay.
For that, so that they can release this lawsone.
How do they get powdered up? Do they...
They get them, they send them to mills and then they're sifted and they go through all that sort of process. So
oh.
there's plants where they,
okay.
well not like processing plants
yeah.
where they have that done.
Oh.
So the lawsone molecule that's in the leaf will gradually migrate from the henna paste into the outer layer of the skin or hair and bind to the proteins, creating a stain.
Mm.
So, yeah, that's the active compound that is...
Yeah, that makes the hair.
Yeah, the dye.
Okay.
So it's been... Henna has been used since antiquity in ancient Egypt to dye skin, hair and fingernails, as well as fabrics. In ancient Egypt, the mummy of Ahmose Henutamidu, that was the 17th dynasty in 1574... Her own hair had been dyed a bright red at the sides and they found that, you know,
oh,
when they
okay.
discovered her tomb. And then, bringing it forward, in the 1950s, Lucille Ball popularised the henna rinse on the television show I Love Lucy.
Oh,
so
okay.
that was when it started becoming westernised.
Right.
Was through that show. So, yeah, it's there's a lot of traditions with henna. A big one is the Night of the Henna, a celebration connecting young, fertile women and henna. And this was celebrated by most groups in areas where henna grew naturally. Jews, Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus and, I don't know, Zoroastrians all celebrated their marriages and weddings by adorning the bride and the groom with henna, and I touched on that a bit earlier.
Oh.
Across the Middle East, battle victories, births, circumcision, birthdays always included henna as part of their celebrations.
Uh-huh.
I've tried convincing my husband to use the nice bright red henna on his beard.
Yes.
Because he's not Muslim, but I just think it looks pretty. He's not keen.
Oh.
He's not naturally red at all.
Oh, no.
Muslim men use the henna as a dye for hair and most particularly their beards as a commendable tradition of the Prophet Muhammad. Henna is commonly traded today as a powder, which is mixed with one of a number of liquids, including water, lemon juice, strong tea and other ingredients, depending on the tradition. And you touched earlier in the show, apple cider vinegar is.
Yeah.
So I used henna the other last month on my husband's hair, just as a trial.
Yes.
And it didn't hold very well. He's got very thick hair. I don't know if that maybe had something to it. But I realised after I'd done it, I hadn't put the apple cider vinegar in.
Yeah.
And so I said to him, next time we do it.
That's the rinse.
And also he's black-haired.
Yes.
So, and I couldn't find a black henna at the time. Oh. And I used a dark brown and I didn't think it really worked. Oh, it was good fun.
Uh-huh.
The henna mix must rest between 1 and 48 hours before use in order to release the lawsone from the leaf matter. So I think that's why we need to leave it sitting on our heads for a couple of hours.
Yeah.
It needs that time
for
that active compound to come and attach to your plant, your hair proteins.
Yeah.
And then what else was I going to say about it? Oh, about it being shelf stable. A natural, so you, in some areas you can buy that paste already made up, so you don't have to do any of that prep yourself, but they are not as shelf stable, meaning that they expire quickly and thereby lose their ability to stain.
Mm.
The leaf of the henna plant contains a finite amount of the lawsone molecule, obviously, and once it's been mixed into a paste, the leaching of the dye molecule into the mixture will only occur for about 2 to 6 days. So you've got about a week there or even less than that if you're going to mix it and then leave it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
They recommend freezing it a few. That will give it a bit of a longer
frozen paste. Okay.
Put it in the... But, yeah. So that sort of brought me on to just a bit of an awareness. There are many adulterated henna pastes for sale today that erroneously marketed as a natural, pure, or all organic. But
they sort of...
They're not. Because what they've had to do in order to keep them fresh and active is put in these... additives and preservatives.
Yeah.
And some of them are really not good at all.
Mm.
Some of them are quite dangerous.
Is that those hair dyes that come in paste already mixed up?
Yeah, one of the big ones is sodium picromate. That's not a good one. And I think they use that. Oh, and there's another one that I wanted to talk about. Did I mention that? Black henna.
Mm.
Oh, I don't think I mentioned that one.
Is that different?
I did read about it, though.
Usually.
You don't find black henna naturally.
No.
And there's a big craze about, you know, the henna tattoos you see are brown.
Yes.
So people have been, I want a black tattoo.
Oh, they'd rather have a black.
So they've been putting this... I'm not sure if it's that sodium one, but there's some sort of chemical that they've been putting in it that is really dangerous and causes cancer and
that
to give it that black pigment.
Oh.
And it's quite commonly used. So just be aware that basically, yeah, it's not a natural thing. Good. But I was just saying before, the hubby, I'm going to try a black henna product, but that's not got that product in it. That's got an indigo.
Yes. Okay. I was going to mention indigo because indigo is also a natural, it's a plant.
It's a plant, yes. Yeah. And so that's okay.
And that's okay. But
they add that to the henna mix.
Yeah.
To give the black.
But I find that one hard to find. It's not very common in the shop, so you
and
might
often
have to,
sold out.
Yeah,
you which might is why I used the dark brown on them. I couldn't get any. Yeah, so keep your eyes out for that one. And the length of time a pre-manufactured paste takes to arrive in the hands of consumers is typically longer than the 7-day dye release window that I talked about. So you can reasonably expect that any pre-made mass product paste that is not shipped frozen is potentially harmful adulterated.
Yeah.
Just a few things I wanted to
just get the henna,
our listeners to be mindful of their
henna powder that is in those sachets.
Yeah, stick with the powder. I've never seen the paste online here in New Zealand.
All you need
anyway.
To do is add water.
It's easy.
It's easy.
And it's the heat as well. You add hot water and that's activates and speeds things up as well.
Yeah.
So and you don't have to have it sitting on your head for like 48 hours.
No. So add hot water, just make up a paste, add it to your hair, leave it for a few hours, wrap it up. Then rinse it out with, is it cold water and then apple cider vinegar?
I add the apple cider vinegar to the dry powder. There's all these things in coffee and all these other things. It's all on the ingredients.
Okay.
They tell you what to do. It's up to you. As long as you use the right amount of water. Yeah. Yeah, it is a playing around with thing. I mean, the first time I did it, what a disaster. And then the other thing with the henna, as much as I am a big fan of it, and it seems to be a lot kinder on my scalp than the other dyes that I've used in the past.
Yeah.
I still haven't quite figured out how to get that henna smell. It's like a grassy kind of herby.
It's not a bad smell.
It's not, I don't know.
You don't like it?
It's okay. But I haven't found anything yet that can nicely mask it. So maybe that's where the plan of the week might come in handy.
Okay. Well, let's go to our plan of the week.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. He'd spent about an hour chatting with a flower, and here's the tale the flower told. Quote, I'm a lonely little petunia and an onion patch.
An onion patch.
Yes, an onion.
Now, our plan of the week is not henna, even though we've talked about it for
quite a bit.
But it is one of the most beautiful plants in the entire world and used so extensively as part of our beauty regime. No, I don't want to call it a regime.
Regime sounds political.
It sounds like.
And I've been dealing with enough politics this morning, as you know.
It has given its name to a war. And our flower of the week is the rose. And because of its beautiful fragrance, it has been the most loved flower. And right up there with the top of any kind of flower.
Yeah.
And used so much as a symbol of beauty and also as part of beautifying ourselves. So I hope every gardener has maybe at least one rose bush somewhere in their gardens, just because, what is...
How many have you got in your garden?
I have 1, 2, 3, 4.
Wow.
And they're not all grouped together. They're sort of dotted around the garden because they want to lend their beauty in different places.
Yeah.
You know how you see a lot of rose gardens? You're just all together on one.
Yeah, you don't know really where to start, are you? You're like, oh, they're all so nice.
And some people go crazy over them. That's why you have all these rose societies and special rose gardens.
Yeah, they do indeed.
And they're all bred and all that. And, it can get overwhelming. But I just want to start with some basic things and just focus on the beauty side of it for today. Now, yes, roses used in perfume. They would get all the rose petals and make perfume out of it. So you'd need quite a lot.
Yeah.
To make the
They still use rose petals and a lot of perfumes. Like these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The particular cultivar they use for fragrance is Rose centifolia, which is Latin for smells really nice.
Okay.
Or the Rosa damascene. So there's certain types of roses that are definitely more fragrant than others.
Yeah.
You just have to, like, smell around for them.
Yeah. So, do you like the ones that are, like, really bold smelling, or do you prefer the more subtle? Sometimes I find like them to be overwhelming, the smell. It's like, whoa, it's so sweet. Like, sometimes just a subtle.
I think I personally prefer the ones that, oh, wow, that is a rose. You can smell
really
it.
Really, like, boom.
Yeah. I think, like, oh, the roses that don't actually have much scent, bother.
Okay.
But that's just me.
Yeah.
If you're growing them for smell, well, I can't really recommend, because there's so many, you just have to, you do the sniff test and maybe head to the botanic garden somewhere near you where they grow a lot of different varieties, and then just smell them when they're in season, which they'll be usually flower around November in our part of the world.
Okay. Oh, that's a good idea.
And then just test out each, because they will usually be labelled with what kind of rose they are in the botanic gardens. Mm. And then you can just have an idea of what you're looking for.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Selena.
So
would you need to take your jar of coffee beans?
Why?
Because that's what you do. Like, if you've got lots of different smells that you're supposed to be, like, imagine at the botanical gardens, it'd be like hundreds.
Yeah.
And the coffee beans, the jar of coffee beans, like, in between each smell is supposed to, like, bring your senses, sort of ground them, and then, you know, you've smelled the next one. Oh. Otherwise, it all just starts smelling almost.
I didn't realise that. I guess it's like wine tasting where you spit out the, you only take a little sip and then you spit it out. I don't know. Otherwise your chips be drank.
You'd be like, I don't know which one I like anymore. Was it the Rosa
Apparently, if you're wanting to use roses for their scent, the darker roses, like the really red ones, are probably better if you're using the petals, because they don't lose their colour as much as, say, a yellow rose or a white rose would sort of go brownish.
Yeah.
That's if you're interested.
I love purple roses.
I love one that is called Blackberry Nip.
Oh.
That's kind of a newer variety, but it just, like, it has this fruity kind of scent that's really nice.
Nice.
Can't really go past without sniffing that one.
Have you got one of those ones?
Actually, no. In my garden, I have roses that are a legacy, or what my brothers had originally planted already, and I didn't want to remove them because when they do flower, and I'm actually not really certain of the variety, but it was a reddish, orangey one.
Oh.
And just lovely smell. Mm. I can't tell you what it smells like. It's just rose.
I know. It's just got that. Yeah, how do you explain it?
And then I've got,
I find them quite like a sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
Ah, yeah.
It's just, you just want to bury your nose in it.
Yeah, and you do. I do.
Now, I will give you maybe a few tips on what to do when you're looking after and planting your roses, and then I'll talk about making rose water for a bit.
Okay.
So this time of year, when you're wanting to plant roses, because it's sort of wintery, best is to plant them when they're bare-rooted, and usually the garden centres will have them in that state.
What does that mean exactly?
So they don't come in pots, they just come bare-rooted. Like
just in a bag or something?
Yeah, in a bag.
Oh, wow.
Because they're dormant at this time of year.
Yeah,
So
that's no point
why,
having soil.
Yeah, that's why it's easy to transplant them. So that's why it is a good time to plant them when they're in their dormant state without any leaves.
Mm.
And then when they don't have leaves, because they, then that's a good time to prune and get them into shape.
Yeah.
Before they start, you know, growing again in the spring. So some tips for pruning. There are certain rules of thumb when you're pruning roses. If they're overgrown, you can actually prune them right down to their sort of first buds, down to the crown, which is their growing point, and then leave a bit of, what do you call, canes sticking up. And then they will actually grow again because they're quite fast growers. Some of them are very vigorous. So you can get away with a lot.
What do you plant like the roots into? Do they like a hummusy kind of?
Roses do quite well in clay soil, would you believe?
They're That's not... probably why I've got a couple that I do nothing with in my place, which is clay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
they're great.
They're not actually that bad in clay. You can get away with not having to have totally free-draining soil.
Yeah.
Because they're quite tough plants. Of course, they've got thorns, which is something that I'm not a fan
but
of.
But I thought they were quite, like, disease-prone. So, well, some varieties,
okay.
at least.
So that kind of side to the rose is when you have them, if you've planted way too many of them and the aphids have a field day.
Oh, yeah.
And also to do with your climate and where we are in Auckland, it tends to be quite too humid for them. So they will get things like
black
spot.
I guess there's a lot of things that suffer here.
Yeah. But you might want to go for sort of more resistant varieties that are known not to be sort of susceptible to that. So you might want to talk with some rose growers about which ones are the best for where you are. Okay?
Yeah.
When you're planting your roses, they have this thing called a crown area where the canes grow out of, and that part just sort of sits on top of the soil and needs to get sun on it. Don't bury it too deep into the ground. They don't like that. So, and the roses love a good mulch around where they live.
Mm-hmm.
So quite a common mulch most gardeners will use is pea straw and keeps them happy.
Nice.
And some companion plants for roses. Now, I have talked about onion weed.
Yes, you have. of course,
because it will make good ground cover and the oniony smell or the garlicky smell keeps away the bugs.
Are there any other companion plants?
Yep, there's parsley. Apparently, it's very good.
Oh, yeah.
And catnip or catmint tends to be quite popular. And also salvias that will also grow sort of hide when the roses are sort of dormant, because they just look like sticks when they're dormant.
Yeah.
And that can pretty them up. And also clematis. So if you've got a climbing rose, they can grow together. Sort of when the roses, just before they're going to come out and bloom, the clematis will have put on a show. So you've got them two together that they can, so if you have both of them at once, sort of like, whoa.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, if you're a rose lover, look after your roses and actually use the rose petals, because there's no point really having roses. You're not really going to use them, really. What do you think, Karen?
I don't really use mine. I shouldn't really say too much.
Oh, but cut them for your vases, use the rose petals and make rose water.
Yep. Mine roses aren't that, like, I have a couple of rose plants, but they don't really shed maybe three flowers.
Oh, that's sad, Karen. Maybe you need to prune them a bit more and be a bit more harder on them.
I need some advice. You need to come around and have a look and tell me what I'm...
Again.
But they're healthy. They're happy. They come back every year.
Yeah.
But it would be nice to have more.
Okay. I wanted to share how to make rose water for those of us who have lots of roses. So basically what it is you gather all your rose petals and you are going to boil them up.
Okay, so how many rose petals are we talking?
Oh, well, a couple of cups full.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm going to have to come over and steal some of yours then, I think.
Yeah. And how to get the rose water from that, of course you're boiling up the roses, but you're actually getting the water that comes off the steam and distilling it into a separate container, and that is your rose water. So
how do you do that?
You put all your rose petals in a big pot or pan, and then you have a upside down dish on top of that. So like a bowl on top of that. And then you set another bowl, which is the right side up, on top of that bowl. And then you cover it with your lid of your pot. Mm. And then you boil the rose petals, and the steam that rises from that will condense into your
upturned
bowl.
Oh, wow. That sounds very...
And that is your rose water, because it will have all the oils and things in it.
Have you done this?
No, but I will want to do it. So that is how rose water is made.
Oh, wow.
So I really want to do this.
You need quite a big pot then, because you've got all those plates on the inside.
But then what do you do with your sludgy rose soup?
What do you do with
it? You can make rosaries out of it. So you would get your sludgy roses that you've boiled up and then all the water would have come off because you've reduced it. And you can roll them into little balls, and then they'll dry out. And then you can thread them into use needle and thread. String them along, and they can be rose beads.
They aren't the actual intact rose head. It's like a...
Petals. And petals all mushed. Yeah, petals mushed. So that's what I've heard. So I'm going to have to try that. Because sounds really fun.
I'm excited to see you turn up with maybe a what do they call those little things you put on your head, like the hippies have?
I don't know. Anyway. Yeah, one of them.
Flowers in your
flower
hair.
Flower car.
Yes, yeah. Selena. You need to update your profile pic.
Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, November? Yeah.
You might see me. Oh, going to Parnell Rose Gardens and secretly.
I'm telling on you. I'm going to tell on you. Oh. It was Selena Chan, rose thief.
But I don't want those rose petals go to waste, do you?
Well, you won't find many at my house. Oh. So.
I just remember gardening in one of the retirement villages where they had lots and lots of them.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't really harvest them, so they'd leave them and then they'd get all deadheads on them. And I thought, then we had to cut them off as the resident gardeners. And
I reckon you could have gotten away with clipping a few of those heads before they died. Mm. I reckon you could have gotten, I would have.
Yeah, we were meant to leave them for the residents to smell.
But there's enough. One in every two.
Yeah.
Okay. You would have probably got you out of the job quicker. You would have been thanking me for that advice.
You could have narc on me.
We saw that gardener taking
the rose paint. Anyway. All right, gardeners, that is enough beauty treatment. I hope you, I'm inspired. And we'll be back next week with more plants that we love.
Absolutely. There's so many. Yep. Where to start and where to end,
All right.
Yeah. I know. All right, guys. Ka kite anō. Thanks for listening.
Happy gardening.